Welcome to Generations with Kevin Swanson. It's about the survival of faith, family, and freedom. It's about the future. He's a father of five, and he's committed to preserving a legacy for the next generation. Here's Kevin Swanson.
Hello, my friends. This is Kevin Swanson, Executive Director for Christian Home Educators, also a pastor. But we're broadcasting today this issue of Generations because we're fathers of five children each. Dave Buhner, also here in studio, producer of this fine program. But today we have a number of hot stories we want to look at, the first of which happened just a few days ago, January 18th, when in the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez claimed that there is no express right to habeas corpus in the United States Constitution. He was debating Senator Alan Spector, a Republican from Pennsylvania, about whether the Supreme Court's ruling on Guantanamo detainees last year cited the constitutional right to habeas corpus. Gonzalez claimed that the court did not cite such a right, then added, there's no express grant of habeas in the Constitution. Spector did not agree. He came back and said, hey, wait a minute, the Constitution says you can't take it away, except in the case of rebellion or invasion. Doesn't that mean you have the right of habeas corpus unless there is an invasion or rebellion? Spector told Gonzalez, you may be treading on your interdiction and violating common sense, Mr. Attorney General, to which Gonzalez said there is no express right of habeas corpus in the Constitution. There's just a prohibition about taking it away. Well,
how can you take away that which is not there?
Yeah, that's my question. Can you say 1984? I think we're past 1984. This is doublespeak, my friends.
Well, and it's interesting because Spector finds all kinds of things in the Constitution that aren't there anyway, and yet Gonzalez denies things that are there.
Dave, what part of this don't you understand? It's Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2 of the Constitution of the United States. The privilege of habeas corpus shall not be suspended. Now, what part of that, what word there is up to interpretation?
Privilege. Privilege is only for the privileged.
Oh, there you go. Sounds like, you know what it sounds like? It sounds like that little pig in Animal Farm.
Napoleon,
right, who would sneak out at night and take his little pan of white paint, and he just, you know, thou shalt not steal, he'd add, unless you're the government. You shall have habeas corpus unless, you know, you're one of the less privileged class. Well, anyway, folks, the right of habeas corpus has been around since roughly 1305. So what do we have on that? 700 years. And what it is, in case you're wondering, I think it's important, right? I mean, the habeas corpus right is important. An individual is that's held in custody, you know, somebody arrested for some particular crime, can challenge the propriety of the custody under the law. What he does is he writes a letter or a petition to the court or to an individual judge, and the judge considers whether or not the jail has the right to hold him. Well, Gonzalez wants to make habeas corpus optional for anybody suspected of terrorist activities. That's the bottom line here. He says, if you arrest somebody, let them rot in jail because of some anonymous tip. Who cares? Now, I think the average person listening today right now to this is, who cares about habeas corpus? Who cares about habeas corpus for suspected terrorists? See, they're not going to care about it until they happen to get arrested because of some anonymous tip. Somebody calls up some government agency, says, I suspect Joe Schmo of some terrorist activity. Immediately, Joe Schmo is arrested. He's slapped in the clink somewhere, and he's left there to rot for decades because somebody thinks that, you know, he's suspected of terrorist activities. Well, at that point, I would think that Joe Schmo would love the right to habeas corpus.
And let's not kid ourselves. The definition of terrorist will expand over time. In fact, people today are calling Christians cultural terrorists. So if we make an exception for terrorism, we're basically opening the door wide open to give up the entire right to address a grievance of incarceration.
And Dave, here's my point. My point is, I think everybody needs to be up in arms over things like this. I think everybody ought to be concerned about this sort of thing. Well, let's move on. There's other stories in the news, Dave. You know, WorldNet Daily's been following the two Border Patrol agents down in Arizona who shot some some drug smuggler, some illegal alien who was trying to get some 743 pounds of marijuana across the border. They shot this guy in the buttocks. Nothing really happened to the guy outside of the fact he got hurt in the buttocks. But now these guys are in prison for, what, 13 years?
They're in prison for 13 years, and the illegal alien drug smuggler was given immunity, was forgiven of all his past debts to this country so that he could testify to put these two Border Patrol agents behind the clink.
Whose side are we on? Whose side are these judges on? I don't get this. I don't get this. Also, Representative Walter Jones, this comes from the latest WorldNet Daily report on this, has on record a letter written to the Attorney General, Gonzalez again, charging that Border Patrol agents Ramos and Jose Compion, and these guys were evidently Hispanic and their origin, were charged under a statute that did not apply to the facts of the case. Jones notes that Ramos and Compion were convicted of violating 18 U.S.C. Section 924C. The statute was written to increase the penalties when a violent criminal, such as a drug trafficker or rapist, carries or uses a weapon during the commission of the crime. In this case, the law enforcement officers, including Border Patrol agents, are issued weapons by the Border Patrol to carry in the normal pursuit of their duty. So, I mean, they were just using their guns for what I think Border Patrol agents do when they defend the borders of the United States of America.
Now, they weren't particularly angels. They did not file a report after the shooting. There was some accusation, perhaps, that they covered up some evidence of the shooting. Perhaps they want to get out some paperwork. I don't know. But 13 years for enforcing the borders against a drug agent seems a little bit on the extreme side.
Yeah, it does. It does. All right, moving along. Pensacola evangelist Kent Hovind was also sentenced Friday afternoon to 10 years in prison on charges of tax fraud. And Kent Hovind is also a creationist. He's been speaking on creationism for, what, 15 or 20 years now? Probably one of the most popular speakers in America for a time on creationism. But he took on the Internal Revenue Service of the United States, claiming that he did not have the responsibility to file his employees' Social Security taxes. And now he gets 10 years in prison. Now, Dave, a couple of things on this one. First of all, I think this is a bad strategy to take on the Internal Revenue Service of the United States of America. You're going to lose every time protesting taxes as he was. Now, I personally don't think that he ought to be responsible for withholding taxes. I don't think that every employer in America should be responsible for being a tax collector. That's a tyranny. That's horrible. That's one of the worst things the government has ever imposed on the free market in America, to turn every single employer in America into a tax collector. The Roman government back in Jesus' time would never have done anything anywhere near this tyrannical, but of course tyrannical governments have done it in the modern age, and people have just said, okay, well, I guess we have to live with tyranny. But Kent Hovind actually took on this thing and said, okay, I'm going to fight this thing, and the end result was he went to jail. So he's getting persecuted for it. Again, I'm not saying this is the sort of thing that everybody ought to be doing. This is sort of a bad strategy to take on the tyranny that we find now in the United States. It's a terrible tyranny, yeah, but is this the right approach? I think the best approach is to get elected to the Congress of the United States and to get elected to state legislatures and fight, you know, tyranny on that level. You fight on this level, you wind up in jail.
Well, think about the IRS's accounting books on this one. They wanted to recover some money for Social Security, which, by the way, is not really revenue the way they do the books in Washington. That's supposed to be a separate account. But because they couldn't get that revenue, they're going to take the man who wasn't paying that revenue, and they're going to put him behind bars where it's going to cost them, what, $30,000, $40,000 a year to maintain his presence there because they couldn't get, what, $40,000? That's not very good accounting.
It's silliness. It's silliness, at least in terms of economics. But government doesn't care about economics. Government cares about controlling people, taxing them, and increasing the expenditures of government. I mean, it's all about increasing the sizes of our prisons. It's all about increasing the amount of money they get so they can pay for those prisons. Dave, it's all about increasing the size of government, building big government. They're into building big government and taxing people to run those governments. And, Dave, here's the other aspect to this, is that Kent Hovind gets 10 years for avoiding some Social Security taxes and saying, guys, take care of your own Social Security tax. I'm not withholding for you. He gets 10 years for that kind of thing? Well, you know what? There are rapists now that are getting 5 years. And I just read about a murderer that gets 10 years. So, you know, there's a lot of examples of people that I think it's justice that's just completely arbitrary today.
Well, Kent Hovind gets the last laugh because his creation ministry has now become a prison ministry, and that is tax-free.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. And he's ministering to, what, 15% of the U.S. population, because the U.S. population, U.S. prison population is the highest in the entire world. In fact, what is it? U.S. makes up about 5% of the U.S. of the world population, and the prison population in America is 25% of the world prison population. So, yeah, we've got more people in prison than any nation on the face of the earth, including the Soviet Union and China. We are indeed the most tyrannical nation. We throw as many people as we possibly can into prison in America because we're the most tyrannical and the most anarchical nation in the world. And the end result is, I guess, we need some guys out there preaching creationism in prison, and that's what Ken Hovind is going to do for the next 10 years. All right, moving along. The California State Legislature is about to weigh in on a question that stirs impassioned debate among moms and dads. Should parents spank their children? Assemblywoman Sally Lieber, she's a Democrat, of course, wants to outlaw spanking children up to 3 years of age. If she succeeds, California would be the first state in the nation to explicitly ban parents from spanking their kids. So the first anti-spanking bill coming to California, and Dave, again, a law that flies smack in the face of the Book of Proverbs and what God has to say, and that is, withhold not the rod from your child. You shall spank him and deliver his soul from hell. The Bible is very, very, very clear on this one. The Bible commands parents to do this sort of thing, and Dave, if this bill passes in California, every preacher in California has the responsibility before God to stand up and tell their congregants to break this law. Dave, more and more, I think Christians are going to be pressed to actually violate the laws of men in order to keep the laws of God. As the apostle said, we ought to obey God rather than men in the book of Acts when they are prohibited from preaching, street preaching, from taking the gospel message to the streets in Jerusalem. And, yeah, we're going to wind up with a lot of Christians in jail and a lot of Christians breaking the law. And hopefully a lot of preachers standing up and telling people to break the laws passed by the California legislature and maybe the Colorado legislature as well.
And Kevin, I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing when preachers stand up for the gospel, for the truth of God's word, and go to prison. Oh, like Paul, or like Peter, or like John, or like so many great martyrs that the church has had historically who have stood up and stood by the truth and didn't count the cost in terms of prison, but they counted the gain.
Could it be, Dave, that Christianity will continue to flourish now if Christians become the persecuted class? And that may happen over the next 10, 15 years. Who knows? And guys, let's not be afraid of this sort of thing. This kind of thing has happened since the beginning of Christianity and of the Christian faith. And yeah, there have been people that have opposed the way we live our Christian lives, but so be it. All right, let's move along to the Philadelphia 11 case. Dave, it's back in the news. You remember the Philadelphia 11, the guys that were arrested for preaching the gospel on the streets, you know, just like Peter and John who were arrested. They said we ought to obey God rather than men. These guys were out in the streets in Philadelphia, and 11 people, there were 6 men and 5 women, and prior to their arrest, the Christians were confronted by a militant mob of homosexuals known as the Pink Angels. Now, you saw the video on this. I saw the video as well. I witnessed it myself. I saw what was going on. The Pink Angels blew loud whistles, carried large pink signs in front of them to block their message and access to the event where they're trying to do some preaching. The homosexuals were screaming the obscenities. The Christians were not screaming the obscenities. The Philadelphia police, under the direction of Chief Inspector James Tiano, the city's police liaison to the gay and lesbian community, refused to take any action as the Christians were continuously followed, obstructed, and harassed, even though they respectfully cooperated with the police at every point, obeying orders to move, short of being directed out of the event. Well, what happened is they got clapped in the clink, and they were in there for about 21 hours, so almost the entire day in jail. They were eventually exonerated of the charges. They were facing 47 years in prison. Exonerated of the charges, they went back and sued and said, we should not have been arrested. You know, this was a false arrest. They shouldn't have done this sort of thing. Well, in a recent decision, Judge Stengel sided with the defendants. That is, the police department, explained that the police were permitted to discriminate against the plaintiffs because of safety concerns, coupled by Philly Pride Presents securement of a permit from the city to hold the $10,000 taxpayer-funded celebration of homosexuality on the public streets. So the end result is that the Christians were right to be put in jail. It was okay to put these Christians in jail. So, ladies and gentlemen, Christians going to jail, this sort of thing is happening more and more. Now, granted, some of these Christians may be a little fringy, and some of you listening are saying, yeah, but, you know, street preaching, why should you street preach? That could get you into trouble. You might even get thrown in jail for that sort of thing. Well, that's what a lot of people were saying about Peter and John, too, in the book of Acts. Okay, so sometimes the fringy Christians get thrown in jail. Well, We got to ask the question again. Are they being thrown in jail because they have raped somebody, because they have killed somebody, because they have ripped off somebody's property? Hey, that's not happening. What's happening is Christians are being persecuted for standing up for the sorts of things that they believe in. Ladies and gentlemen, just a moment. We want to bring up the issue of tyranny on this program. We have given you, what, four or five stories of really what appears to be infringements of justice and the rights of individuals, the freedoms, the God-given freedoms we have received from God and from the Constitution of the United States. In just a moment, we want to take a look at the word tyranny. A lot of people don't use that word or understand that word, but it's an important word because that is precisely the form of nation that you are living in today. A tyranny. We'll be back in a moment to define it and discuss it. We'll be back. Hang in there. We're back on Generations today, talking about the subject of tyranny. Our forefathers talked about it all the time. Seldom hear the word tyranny used, however, even by a lot of the conservative pundits, Dave. If you listen to conservative radio, guys like Rush Limbaugh and others, you don't hear these guys talk about the word tyranny, whereas our forefathers talked about it all the time. Here's Noah Webster's definition in 1828. A tyrant is a monarch or other ruler or master who uses power to oppress his subjects, a person who exercises unlawful authority or lawful authority in an unlawful manner, one who by taxation, injustice or cruel punishment, or the demand of unreasonable services imposes burdens and hardships on those under his control which law and humanity do not authorize or which the purposes of government do not require. And of course, assuming the purpose of government was to defend the country from bad guys and to prosecute criminals who rape, steal, and kill. That was the assumption of our forefathers that founded this nation. Now we've got a tyranny that is far, far exceeding any tyranny the world has ever known. Dave, we have an enforced system of compulsory education that did not exist back in the year 1800. It did not exist in 1700s France. It did not exist in 1500s Netherlands. It did not exist in 1300s England. It did not exist in 800s Constantinople and Turkey. It did not exist in 300s Rome back in the Roman Empire. We have never seen a compulsory education system that forces children onto buses and forces them into an institutionalized form of education. We have never seen that in the history of the world till 1830 or 1826 when it first appeared in Germany. And of course, that was transferred into American and basically almost every other tyranny around the world. And Dave, if you look at, again, a lot of people are thinking compulsory education, who cares? Let them process my children. Let them just force children to be hitting the books at 5-6 years of age all the way to 18. Who really cares? Who gives a flying rip what the government does to my kids? I could care less. My children should be processed through institutions. But you know what? That didn't exist back in the 1800s. That is a law, that is an enforced requirement upon families and children that did not exist for thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years of world history, but it exists today. Moreover, when you look at taxation, one of the examples that Noah Webster brought out in his definition was taxation. If you look at taxation, Roman taxation at its very height, this according to a Cambridge University study, Roman taxation at its very height ran about 13 centurias. And that was well under 5% of the gross domestic product of the Roman Empire. Ours is now at 50%. So again, we have 10 times the amount of taxation that the Roman Empire had at its height, at its zenith, when it was as tyrannical as it could possibly be. It was still under 5%. And Dave, of course, the biblical reference to this, again, back in 1 Samuel chapter 8, says that if a government, if a king ever takes more than 10%, which the Roman Empire never did, ever takes over 10% of the people's income, the people should cry out to God. That is a living tyranny. That's one of the most horrible situations you could ever find. And yet, our governments in the United States of America, at the federal level, at the state level, at the local level, they tax us to about 47% of the gross national income. The tax load for the Romans was greater than England and France of the 1500s. Okay, when England and France was, you know, starting to develop their empires, yeah, even then, the Roman Empire was greater than England and France, and yet the tax load for the mighty Roman Empire was far, 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 far less than the modern states of the 1900s. So what we're seeing is a growth, a huge growth in government in our day, something that Jesus never saw. Jesus, of course, during Jesus' time, I mentioned every employer was not forced to be a tax collector. It was actually a very, very bad thing for anybody to turn into a tax collector. Remember that, Dave? In fact, tax collectors were the lowest form in society. But today, every single employer is forced to be a tax collector. That, my friends, is a tyranny. Now, let me be very clear here. We're defining tyranny here. A tyranny is a nation that takes 47% of your money in taxation. That's what a tyranny is. A nation that forces every single business owner to be a tax collector, that's a tyranny. A nation that has tens of thousands of regulatory agencies regulating every aspect of your lives, from food to medicine to building to housing, etc., etc., etc. That, my friends, is a tyranny. It's a nation that requires you to spend 10 to 15 to 25 hours working through tons of paperwork to get your taxes in every year. It's a nation that forces children into state institutions from 6 to 18 years of age, compulsory state education programs. That, my friends, is a tyranny. That sort of thing has not happened for 5,000-6,000 years of all of recorded history, maybe the exception of Sparta. In some of those cases, they might have had some compulsory education there. But for the most part, we have never seen the form of tyranny we have today. And yet, Dave, my guess is the average person listening today is saying, a tyranny? Man, I thought this was a cool place to live. I thought I was living in the free states of the United States, you know, the home of the free, land of the brave. I thought that's what it was. I didn't think it was the home of the tax, the land of the slave.
Well, even in Sparta, they didn't tell you what size toilet you could purchase on the open market. They didn't tell you how many gallons it would flush. But Kevin, we love taxes.
Oh, yeah.
We love taxes. In Colorado, we passed Initiative C because we didn't think we were being taxed enough.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
love paying taxes here. We love the tyranny.
People today love tyranny. They embrace tyranny. They love big government. They like slavery to government and slavery to sin. See, the bottom line, Jesus put it this way. You're going to be a slave to something. You're either going to be a slave to this world and to sin, or you're going to be a slave to Christ. Now, he said, I think it was a Matthew chapter 13, that my burden is light. So if you're going to be a slave to me, if you're going to be a servant to me, my burden is light. You'll be free from government. You'll be free from sin. You'll be free from a lot of things. But you'll be a slave to me, and you'll have to follow a pattern of righteousness. Dave, listen to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Here Paul says, are you called being a slave? I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's a slave to a big corporation, a slave to government, a slave to whatever. Are you called being a slave? He says, don't worry about it. But if you may be free, that if you have the option to be free, use it rather. He says, it's better to be free from big government. It's better to be free from the unnecessary servitude of men. For he that is called in the Lord, being a servant, is the Lord's free man. You are bought with a price. Be not the servants of men. So, Dave, I guess more than anybody else, the average non-Christian listening says, I love being a slave to sin, and I love being a slave to big government. I just love it and love it and love it. But if there are Christians listening today, I want to exhort you, Christians, to be the servant of Christ and stop being the servant of big government. Stop being the servant of banks. Stop being debtors, if possible. Obviously, you can't totally bring yourself out from under the tyranny of debt and government. But if it's possible, Paul says, use it rather. Be the servant of Christ. Don't submit yourself to the servitude of men, whether it be slaveholders or whether it be big governments. Don't do it. You know, the Pilgrims and Puritans, Dave, talked about this concept of being a free man very, very often. And these courageous Christians wanted to be free men. They knew that being a free man was to be a self-governed man, a man who was willing to govern himself by the laws of God and not rely on government to tell him what to do all the time. They knew that being a free man took effort and took a self-government. I've got a lot of information on what it is to be a free man in my book, The Second Mayflower. I really try to trace out this concept because, guys, we're talking about something that's been lost in the 21st century. This concept is almost missing. You're not going to get it in the public schools. You're not going to get it from ABC, NBC, and CBS. You're not going to get it from your average government bureaucrat. They're not going to understand what it is to live as a free man and to enjoy the freedom from big government and to enjoy freedom from the unnecessary servitude of men. They don't know. They don't know what it is to breathe the air of freedom. But our forefathers did. And I want to revive this concept. I want to live this way. You can get my book, The Second Mayflower, by contacting us at the office at 877-842-CHECK, or just go to our website, kevinswanson.com, and click on store and pick up my book, The Second Mayflower, How Christian Ethics Can Restore Our Freedom. I think we can restore our freedom, but it's going to start when freedom begins to beat in the heart of God-fearing men and men who love freedom. Ladies and gentlemen, you can interact with our program by emailing me at host@kevinswanson.com. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world, at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson, inviting you back again next time as we lay down a vision for the next generation.